This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Sol Daniela. I am here with the amazing Pete Miranda, a legend, really, of music, a saxophone master, and he will... I wanted this to be a program for him. I want him to talk about it. And thank you so much for having me, Pete.
It's an honor. It's an honor, sweetie.
You know how they say, you're one of the coolest cats out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Like they say, when they say you're a legend,
yeah,
that means you're old.
Yeah.
But I know what they mean.
But you're young at heart.
Yeah, all my stuff. Yeah, my kids and my grandkids keep me young at heart. And that's what it's all about, life. You know, accept life. And, you know, you're here X amount of years and they balls in your court and you do what you want with it. And,
yeah.
You know, this the Lord throws a... like a maze at you. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see what you can do with this. You know, so
right. That's okay. Listen,
I've been lucky.
I like that metaphor.
I love what I do, and
so let's start from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning.
Okay.
I know eres puertorriqueño, pero eres de Nueva York.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start from the beginning. Where were you born, and how come you come here, and how come you end up?
Yeah,
picking up the sax.
I was born April 8, 1945. And I think that was just like a month before the war ended. I remember my father telling me that. And I was born in Manatí, Puerto Rico. I've been back, you know, being a musician, I've been to Puerto Rico, I don't know how many times. I believe, yes, so many times. You're always traveling, but I've never had enough time. It's never enough time to go travel and never enough time to go visit what relatives I had there. But I was born in 45, and... I came up here 6 months later. My mother came up with myself, and you know, brought me as an infant. And she had a sister who lived on Brook Avenue. When we lived on Brook Avenue for about a year or two, and as a toddler, and then we moved to the Upper West Side, not Washington Heights. The Upper West Side is like the middle part above Hell's Kitchen, you know. From Lincoln Center up, it's kind of Upper West Side. And I lived at 571 Amsterdam Avenue until I got really married. So I spent all my years at 571, you know, my childhood years. And that's also a coincidence. That's where I met my wife. And we were in school when we were 10 years old together. It's a coincidence, but that's how we met.
Did you fall in love at 10? Oh,
well, not at 10 years old, but, you know, it's typical fighting in school. And then one thing led to another as the years go by, because mm-hmm. we were still in the same neighborhood. And, you know, one thing led to another. Then I got married rather early. I think I was about 19 or 20 when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And we have four lovely kids and we have five grandkids. Everybody's doing well. And so were you... My music, growing up, I went to a public school. It was called 166, and I did there from kindergarten to the sixth grade. And obviously, after you do public school, you go to a junior high. And when we ended up in sixth grade, they said, okay, you guys are going to go to this new school. It was called William J. O'Shea on 77th Street, Junior High School 144. And I went there my first year, and it was a brand new spanking new school. And I'll never forget it. It's still like yesterday. My first day in school, first day we boarded the brand new school. I mean, the paint was still wet. So we went in, and now I'm in the seventh grade. So my first day in seventh grade, you know, we're all there in the classroom, and the teacher, I forgot her name, but anyway, she says to us, in general, you kids, now this is the first day, he said, you kids, and I'm maybe 12 years old, I think, you kids are going to be the orchestra class of the school. Now, we didn't get there, we didn't get picked to go into that room, into that club, we were just told. We didn't know anything about music, nothing, no inkling. And so she says, to make a long story short, she says to us, take a piece of paper and write down... what you want to play. And you know, I've taught for many years, and I remember, it's what I used to do too. When I used to go in front and get kids, write down what you want to play, you know, you know, tell them what to play. So I put whatever 12-year-old kid puts on paper, I put drums. I mean, the whole class, that thing must have put drums. So I put drums. So when she comes around, you know, alphabetically, she comes to my, you know, my name is Miranda. So she goes, Peter. By that time, if you go a little back more, I was born Pedro after my father. But when you come to New York, everything has turned around, and Pedro, I don't know, that's the way they call me in school, Pedro. And it's very annoying, even at 7, 8 years old, the teacher came from that. P-E became P-A, you know, Pedro. And then before you know it, Peter, hey, Peter, they translated. So I guess Spanish, me quedé Peter. And all my documents are mixed up. My birth certificate says Pedro, but some of my traveling stuff says Peter, some of it says Pete. So I stayed with the, you know, at the translation, Pete. So when the teacher came up to me, she says, Peter, we have no more drums. You know, everybody, you know, I got the letter M is me. So she goes, I says, okay. So I don't know what she's going to say to me. So she tells me, we're going to make you a flute player. I didn't even know what a flute was. Like I said, I'm 12 years old. I could, I don't know. My thing was playing baseball, you know, Laryngillary, all the stuff we played, the city kids. And I didn't know nothing about music. But it was like born again. You know, they told me I'm going to be a flute player. And then they put us in the music class, in the music room, a week later after. And they took us and they showed us how to put the instruments together. And I put the instrument together. I still didn't know how to hold it. And they have, like the music teachers today, which is the right way, they go to school, college. Eventually, when they graduate, they're supposed to have, like, be able to get by in every instrument to teach a child, you know? But they themselves master one that they originally play. So I had the same problem when I said to go teach trumpet. I wouldn't know how to teach trumpet. More or less, I can get the kids started. So he was a violinist, a classical player. His name was Alan Blank. And he tells me, okay, Peter, this is the way you hold the flute, and bum, 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 bum. And this is how you get the sound. He went around the room and told the kids all the instruments, the violins, the trumpet, he went around. And I don't know, as soon as he got to me and I started, I just couldn't wait the next day to get to it and start to get a sound. And one thing, I just got the, I'm not trying to blow smoke like they say, but I got, you know, you get hooked on, when you like something, you're at an early age, some people get it later on, but I know that's what I wanted to do. You know, you hear the stories from biography, from actors or musicians or people who say that they go up, it hits you, you know, and, you see something on TV and you go, I want to do that, or I want to be an actress, or I want to be a writer, and I can't stop writing poetry, you know, that's what you want to do. This is so simple. You know, the hard part is to making a living at. So, at 12, I knew that's what I was in love with this flute. And I was getting so good because they give you a flute. But the funny story I always tell people when they ask me about that learning flute, I was playing flute and, you know, again, not to blow smoke, but I was like the top dude in the class. And I was so proud of myself. And they were coming along good, but I was like a hair above them. And the teacher made me feel so good to me. He tells me, Peter, you know, I'm a violinist, and I can't teach you any more flute. You're doing very good. I mean, you got a lot of potential. Here is a name of my friend who's a flutist, and you call him up and you tell him that I sent you. And in those days, it was $2 an hour for a lesson. So my mother dug the $2 up my father, and I used to go once a week to this guy. I'm in. On 37th Street, where they have the flower, or the flower arrangement, I forget that.
Yeah, they still have that area.
Yeah, right. That's what
the 20s.
He had a loft.
29, 30.
Alan Perkins, I never forget him. And he was teaching me fluent. And I'm really getting above all the kids in the class, because thanks to him, in my $2. And he was such a good teacher. A lot of times my mother wouldn't have the $2. So before I take the lesson, I say to Alan, I don't have the $2. He said, don't worry about it. So, and he was a true teacher, and I learned with him. And then, I just kept getting better and better, and to the seventh, eighth, and I got, and then when it came to go to high school, I knew York at one time, Now you have what they call LaGuardia High School, but you know, I'm talking about the 50s, the late 50s, middle 50s. When I was going to high school, you had to audition. There was two schools. There was one, it was called Music and Art, and David Valentine and Pete Nader. I mean, the cream of the crop went into that school, and then which is now Philip Randolph, 135th and Convent Avenue. And then the other one was Performing Us, where I went. And I went with Dom DeLuise. I went with a lot of famous musicians. I think Leonard Bernstein went there. And dancers, musicians, and actors. So when I got there, I started, you know, you had to audition. So I failed the test for music and art because my academics were so high. And they looked at that. They said, no, your plan is fine, but because of my grades, I wasn't a bad kid. I just wasn't there with the academics. And Performing Arts accepted me. Thank God for that. So, yeah, Eddie Murphy went there. They went on later, much later. Mm-hmm. But it's a really good school. It's still there, but under the name, I think, of...
LaGuardia.
They killed the both schools and they built LaGuardia.
Oh, okay.
But my old school is still on 46th Street. And if you blink, you pass it. It was built, I think, in the early 1900s or the late 1800s. It's called Kennedy's wife. What was her name? Her maiden name?
Beauvoir.
Yeah, that's it's named after her. It's mostly a private school. I pass it all the time. Like, oh my God, I remember standing out there in the cold going up the steps. So I started studying there. And my teacher told me, he said, you have potential and stay with it. And again, I'm trying to, in my mind, I have to say this to you. When I was going still to junior high school, when I was learning how to play flute, I couldn't afford a flute. That's what I forgot at the time. My parents couldn't afford a flute. And they let you take the flute home. You had to sign for it. And sometimes the other flute players that needed it more, they would give that. And I couldn't get a flute to get home. So I went in the basement of the building where I lived as a kid, and the super always had mops and all that, and you know it, there's everything in the basement. So I found a piece of a mop, and it was broken. So I took it upstairs and I measured the flute. It's about 2 feet long. So I measured it and I cut the piece of wood, the mop stick, 2 feet. And I mean, it's impossible what I did. Not what impossible, what I did was stupid. But I thought it was great. In those days, they weren't markers. There was we didn't have markers in the 50s, you know, middle 50s, in 55, 56, I guess. And we had crayons. So with the black crayon, I put the dots where the keys are on the piece of stupid wood. It couldn't be, it was solid. You couldn't blow into a solid piece of wood. And I would go around the house like this.
But you were practicing.
Yeah. And my mother called my father, and in those days, typical Puerto Ricans, you know, my father came from Puerto Rico here. He followed us later. He was a tractor trailer driver, so he couldn't get a job as a tractor. He got a job in the bodega, like they all do. I shouldn't say all, my respects to people who, but he got a job in a bodega. And he couldn't afford to buy my flutes. And my mother would call me and said, tu hijo está going bananas. Me está volviendo loca tocando el mapo. She said, you got to get him a flute. This kid is going berserk. And I said, I'm not going berserk. I just went. So he went to, in those days, there was no master charge, there was no visa, but were hundreds were pawn shops. And if you wanted something, you didn't wait by your visa. You had to have cash. So you pawned everything, you know? And then after 60 days, if you couldn't take it out, it belongs to the pawn shop. So if you used to walk all of 8th Avenue, every other pizza place, which is now, was a pawn shop. And they would put stuff in the window. My father bought me my first flute was $25. And I was in heaven. So that's, you know, that's when I jumped to that. That means a lot to me when I teach and I see a kid who has potential and doesn't say, oh, the poor kid, I got to get him an instrument, you know. So Yeah, so when I was going to high school, back to high school, I was doing very well. I was playing with the school orchestra. And then I God is good, but which he is. When I left the fight, I don't know what made me go down to Broadway and ADH meeting. I just said, a lot of times they said, this business is luck. It's luck, but you also got to pay the piper. You got to work for whatever you want. Not everything comes easy. But I was just lucky. One day I was walking down a block. We lived on 88th. On 88th and Broadway, there was a theater there. Been there for years. It was called The New Yorker. And right above the, in fact, that New York, all they played but old movies from the 30s. And you had all the college kids come from Columbia. They would play like 1 week of Godard on 1 week of the Marx Brothers. And, you know, so one day I'm walking right by, and right above it, above the theater, they had the windows open, was a rehearsal studio. And this is where my life started, really. I'm walking by the theater and I hear music, just that's a studio, and that's my boy. His name is Lynn Oliver. He was the owner of the, I was listening to Surya from the street, I'm hearing music, I go, oh man, this is what I want to do. So I think I'm maybe 14 then, and I go up the steps, and I hear, man, it was coming at me from left and right, and all doors closed, but you can't see what's in. You hear the music. And I stand at the door and just listen. Every day I would come in and just stand at the same door, and there'd be somebody else rehearsing. And then one day I see him come around. He's walking around. He had a Coke machine then, and those people used to, buy Cokes before they go. And I still knew. I knew it was a rehearsal room, but I didn't know who, and I see that he was a proprietor. And I see him, he looks at me, he says, I see you come here every day. And I go, yeah, I love the music, man. He says, do you play? I said, yeah, I'm in performing arts high school. I'm a flute major. I think I was 14, I think. Yeah, 14 maybe. And he says to me, you want to throw the garbage out? Oh, yeah. So he says, okay, you go to this room and you throw this garbage out. And then there's a big room there, you throw that garbage out. And there's about 4 or 5 rooms. So here after 3 o'clock, I shoot for the studio and I'm there throwing out. I got the garbage and I run it down to the theater where they had a back door and I threw the garbage and I'm eating all this up. And the reason I think you would understand is because I'm in what I want to be. And so he would tell me, and this is God's honest truth, they would tell me, okay, and they had numbers. Studio, that's the other studio, the bigger one. And that's where I taught. But somebody would rent, Tommy Dorsey would rent that room because they're in town and they're going to do a concert, so they'll rehearse for 3 hours. So he would tell me, and I didn't know who they were. I'm a little, a snotty kid. Not snotty. He'd tell me, okay, Studio B, 5 o'clock, you got Glenn Miller going in there, and he'll give me a 4 trumpets, 5 saxophones, and I would go in there, and I would set the chairs up. And in those days, people smoked, heavy smokers. I'd be watching enough movies. So I was the king of the ashtrays. I would set myself up in the bathroom and I wash all these Trezillion ashtrays and dry them and put them by. Every musician had to have an ashtray. But, here I am. And oh, my God, I'm watching Glenn Miller. People were killed to see this guy. Then I've seen Maynard Ferguson. Then God is good. I saw Tito Rodriguez and I go, this is, oh my, oh, and I'm sitting on the other one, the little snotty nose kid, and all these great, and he told me, okay, you got Aretha Franklin in Studio D, and I'm going to be, I didn't know what Aretha Franklin, oh yeah, but I'm not boasting, but that's what the people did, those things. Oh, you got Dionne Warwick in the G, and I run to G, and I Miss Warwick, and there was a public phone, there's no phones then, I mean, there were phones, but there was a public phone in the lobby. And everybody had the studio number, so I would pick up the phone and say, this is Lynn Oliver Studio. He says, can you put Nina Simone on? I go, yes, sir. And I ran down and Simone's telephone. So I got so much vibes from being in that environment, and that's how I paid for my lessons, because he taught me. I didn't have to. He says, "Okay, it's your lessons." So once a week, I would mop the floor. I would put wax. Every day I would do this, and then he would, you know, he would give me my flute lesson. And one day he finally told me, he said, "Peter, you're not gonna make money with the flute. You're gonna starve. You gotta play saxophone and clarinet." And I thought about it. He says, "You know, you just can't make it with one instrument unless you're like a super virtuoso, you know." He said, "No, you're meant to, you say you play saxophone. You say you watch all the bands here; they all play saxophone. It's mandatory to play this and play the clarinet, and it's mandatory." So I took him. I go, "Okay." So my mother saved money, and I got one thing, $50, and I stuck. And he wasn't really a saxophone player. He was a drummer, really, and percussionist and piano player. So he taught me that part. So he said the same thing like my other teacher. He said, "I have a great teacher for you." Boom, boom. And these, at the time, these guys, they were idols. And I didn't know, I was studying with people would die to study with these people. And I was studying saxophone, and I just kept getting better and better. And my reading, which is what it's about, reading, you know, we call us sight readers. I got so good. And eventually, a couple of years later, they didn't have kids. So I was their adopted kid. Every time Christmas came, I had all these great musical books that I still have them put away that he gave me, and you know, and I remember that, and you know, the reading he taught me how to read all this stuff is the inkling, because without that, you're dead. You know, how many times are you gonna play the same song? Yeah, you hear me? There are so much great musicians who are talented who play by ear. You know, but these are like the superstars. But if you're going to back up so-and-so and he did a recording, he gives you the music, it's supposed to sound like the record again. So it's your job to read it correctly. And that was my specialty. And so after 2 or 3 years of learning, man, I was in heaven. He started teaching me. He said, "I want you to run a class." And we had workshops there. And I started, I think I was about 17. I think I was 17 there. I was running workshops of teaching kids how to play and, you know, walks of life. And I said, "My God, I don't believe I'm doing this." And then a few days after that, I was mopping the hall. And it was like a movie. But it was like I always say, people, I say these stories, they say, "Hey, he's full of beans." And this is a true story. I'm mopping the floor. And I had put Tito Rodriguez in one of the rooms. And he had been there a few times, and he was really close with my teacher. You know, besides only, but my teacher was with the Jack Parr Show, the very talented musician. My teacher, I go see him at the cemetery, because it's called, he's buried like 300 feet from my mother-in-law. I don't know how this happened. Mm. So when I take my wife to see him, I say, "Let me go see Lynn," and you know. He told me,
you were mopping the floor.
Yeah.
Tito Rodriguez.
Yeah, and my mom's grave, my father, he comes out and he told, and he was telling, I couldn't bear it, that he needed a tenor player because the guy who was playing was late. And so we had a Rolodex. I mean, with every musician there from all the workshop, man, people always leaving the cards on the wall. So he told him, I swear this, it was true. He told, and I was still mopping. And he says, "The kid can play. He's a good reader." He said, "Okay, we have your horn?" I go, "Yeah, because I have it in the studio." I sat in with Tito Rodriguez. I was like 16 years old. And I was so whined because I seen albums of my mother. This guy is God. And one thing led to another. And then after I left there, I started playing with the local Latin bands. Now I'm 17. And then I thanks to Lynn, there's one piece. Where is the picture? Yeah, this here. This is my teacher. And this is, we're playing Bar Mitzvah or something. So the funny thing, people have a reputation of playing with all the Latin bands, which I respect, and I thank everybody. And I did play with all the 99 point, with all the Latin men that were there. But he brought me up the right way because I was doing this before I was doing the Latin. So I was playing big band stuff. I was playing rock and roll. I was playing Bar Mitzvah. Even though I was 16 and 17, I got broken backwards into the with the white music.